I'll try to do a little better this afternoon than this morning in terms of leaving time for discussion. But I'll tell you ahead of time, it's going to be difficult. Because it's one of my favorite stories in the whole Srimad Bhagavatam, and it's hard to have something that you like so much and keep it short. Because part of the beauty of the pastime of Sudama is the detail. And when the first temple I became part of was the Boston Temple a few years ago. And at that time there wasn't a BBT. It was ISKCON Press that was part of the Boston Temple. And so the artists and the transcribers and the editors and the everything, even the printing press, was in the building. And the system that was going, at least for that time that I was there, was Prabhupada would send cassettes, like those little micro cassettes, and then the first persons to get the micro cassettes were the artists. They would hear the translations or the recordings. And then three would get together and conceptualize what paintings they would make for that particular section of the Bhagavatam or whatever they were working on. So the way that it worked is they had a consensus. And then Bharadraj Prabhu would do the sketch of what it would look like. The action. And, where the characters would go on the canvas. And then Jadarani would fill it in. And then Muralidhar came and did all the detailed work. All the jewels and the pupils of his eyes and everything. The halo around Krishna and the details of what Krishna's flute would look like, all the details. And I appreciated details as part of the beauty. It's one of, like, with paintings, the longer it takes, the more expensive it gets because there's more detail. Anyway, it's hard to narrate something that you love very much and skip the detail because it's part of the beauty, but I just wasted 3 minutes to explain why it's going to be tough for me. Referring back to Friday evening, for some of you were not with us Friday evening, part of the effort Friday evening was explain the theme, what it means, why this theme was chosen, and second part was a scriptural foundation for saying yes to Krishna. So one of those references I'm going to speak about now again is from Jiva Goswami's Bhakti Sandarbha, where he is describing the saying yes to Krishna or Sharanapati attainment is of two kinds, and this pastime is of the first kind. Just an affirmation, Krishna, you are everything. Exclamation point. Krishna, you are everything. Dedication of self unto Krishna. And that is one of the outstanding qualities of Sudama. Now there's different Sudamas in Srimad Bhagavatam. There's one Sudama that's part of Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan. And this is a different Sudama who was a class friend of Krishna's. And then later, when Krishna moved from Mathura, where his family was, to Dwarka, where he became the prince or the head of the Yadu dynasty clan, Sudama lived near him in Porbandar, not so far from Dwarka. So to begin, I'd like to make references from different sources that speak about Sudama, because he's a luminary in Srimad Bhagavatam literature, known and appreciated for his wonderful, wonderful qualities. Start with Chaitanya Mangala, and then Chaitanya Bhagavat, and then Padyavali by Rupa Goswami. So Chaitanya Mangala, we're familiar, Prabhupada translated Chaitanya Charitamrita. There were many other biographies of Lord Chaitanya's life, and one of them is called Chaitanya Mangala. And in glorifying the merciful nature of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, there's a nice verse that makes reference to Sudama. And the reference is that Krishna, the personality of Godhead, is attracted by the devotion of his devotee. He's not attracted by material qualifications. He's attracted by the devotion of his devotee. Computers are great when they work. There we go. So, in Chaitanya Mangala, there's reference that it's stated in the negative. Krishna, what was the... there was a hunter in Vedic literature. A hunter, like Magari. What was the piety of Magari? He became an object of Narada Muni's affection. He became a perfected soul. But what was... previously, what was his piety? And Dhruva, just a little boy, 5 years old, what was the age qualification of Dhruva to get the mercy of Lord Vishnu? Or Gajendra, the elephant, what education did he have? Of course, in his previous life, but as an elephant, Lord Vishnu wasn't attracted to give his mercy to him because he was very scholarly. Kubja, when Krishna entered Mathura, there was a hunchback lady, not so attractive. But Krishna gave his mercy to Kubja, not because she had the opulence of beauty. Or Sudama, the Brahmin who we're going to be describing. What was the wealth of Sudama? Nothing. Krishna wasn't attracted by his wealth or gave his mercy because he's a rich man. Or Vidura, what was his social status? He was a Shudra. Or take the other side, Ugrasena, he was this powerful warrior. Was Krishna kind to him because he was a powerful warrior? The kindness of Krishna goes to one who has some affection and some faith for him. And Krishna gives himself in reciprocation with that love and faith towards him. Their mood of devotion. That's Krishna. He doesn't look at the external, he looks at what's inside. So, similarly, there's a very nice reference in Chaitanya Bhagavat where it's described that even if Krishna's thirsty, of course, Krishna is beyond needs like that, but he will not accept even water from someone who is proud that's offered in a gold cup or drinking vessel. But he'll accept from the hand of the most insignificant person something that's meaningful, like Sudama. So what Sudama had to offer wasn't at all opulent, but he was totally free from pride and totally filled with devotion and dedication to Krishna. So Chaitanya Bhagavat says that's the nature of Krishna. He reciprocates with his devotee. Now here's a very nice one. This is the 10,000th anniversary this year of Ramanujacharya's appearance. Is that right? 1,000? 1,000? 1,000. Okay, 1,000th anniversary. Yeah, what am I saying? So we have our prayer that we say when we, after we offer to the deity and before we take our meal. We have two of them. So here's what Ramanuja would recite, quoted in Padyavali by Rupa Goswami. O Murari, I hope that you just enjoyed the palatable food presented by the wives of the brahmanas, just as you enjoyed the palatable food offered by the wives of the brahmanas, the meal offered by Vidura, the milk and yogurt of the cows in Vraja, the handful of chipped rice from your friend Sudama Brahmana, the breast milk of Mother Yashoda, and the delicious foods prepared by the young girls of Vraja. I hope you will also enjoy the offering I now place before you. So the indication is this is a prayer that Ramanujacharya recited and had his followers recite as they were making offerings to the Lord. Garga Samhita, one more reference, says, if the most relishable item is offered by a non-devotee, the Lord does not accept it. But if an ordinary man, if ordinary item is offered with love, the Lord accepts it. This was demonstrated when the Lord ate the rice that Sudama offered. So in these ways, that in various places, Sudama's very special position as an exalted devotee, although it wasn't wealth that he was decorated with, it was simply his devotion that he was decorated with. And he then became the object of affection because of that devotion, natural reciprocation with the affection of Sudama. So the narration of Sudama, it's two chapters, chapter 80 and chapter 81. In other words, it's towards the end of the whole 10th canto, because 89 is the final chapter of 10th canto. It comes after 79. And in 79, it's a description of Lord Balaram. And at the beginning of the section of Lord Balaram, he is called upon to help the brahmanas because of Shalva and Balvala. So he dismisses Balvala. There's this exchange where he decides to go on pilgrimage because Krishna makes a decision to not take part in the Kurukshetra battle because on the opposite sides are cousins and cousins. So he doesn't want to take sides with either. Balaram also decides to not take sides with either, but instead to go on pilgrimage. Just a good excuse to purify the places of pilgrimage by his presence. So he goes on pilgrimage, and one of the places that Balaram goes, it's in chapter 79, he goes to a place, Naimisharanya, where Ramaharshan Sutta, one of the direct disciples of Vyas, Ramaharshan is reciting the Puranas. Balaram enters, everyone rises except the speaker. And he's thinking, well, I'm the speaker, so I don't need to rise in the presence of the personality of Godhead because I'm speaking the Puranas. Balaram understands that his mentality is a mentality of pride. So Balaram takes up one blade of grass, walks up to Ramaharshan and touches his chest with the blade of grass. It pierces his body. His heart is pierced and he dies right on the spot. bloody mess. And everyone goes, but it's the personality of God that he just made an action, so what to do? And Balaram says, well, if you want, I can bring him back to life. And they say, no, you're the personality of Godhead, but what do we do to continue? Balaram provides the solution. He has a son, Suta. Suta is very qualified. He's not proud like Ramaharshan. He knows everything because he's been trained by his father, so he can speak. So after they clean up the mess, then Suta Goswami continues. And then Balaram continues on his journey, and he meets some brahmanas, and he instructs them in transcendental knowledge. And the chapter ends with Maharishi Shukadeva Goswami saying that anyone who hears these wonderful pastimes of Lord Balaram with faith, surely their lives will become purified and they will become perfected and return to the spiritual world. So that's a nice chapter if you want to go back to the spiritual world. They become very dear to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So the commentators say, it's kind of as if the Bhagavatam could have ended there. But Shukadeva Goswami Maharishi Parikshit was very expert. He knew how to milk the cow. He knew how to have Shukadeva Goswami speak more, speak more, speak more. So he glorifies what he has just experienced. O Master, I wish to hear about other valorous deeds performed by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Mukunda, whose valor is unlimited. Then a lot of commentary on the next verse, which is, it's setting the mood or the message for the whole of the Bhagavatam. The benefits from hearing and narrating the Bhagavatam's messages, two main things. Vishesha gya, Vishesha, here Prabhupada has, or our translators have indicated, the essence of life. Vishesha gya. By hearing the topics of the Personality of Godhead, we can again connect with the essence of life. I was sharing this with some devotees earlier. When the very first time, I like this very much, the very first time the Prabhupada spoke in a public place in the Tompkins Square Park, after a 2 hour or so kirtan, there was a large crowd of people that were gathered around the devotees that were singing and dancing and joyfully experiencing Prabhupada's kirtan. And then the kirtan stopped, and as we had the practice to do, Prabhupada spoke something. So he stood up and faced the audience and said, I've not come to teach something new. I've only come to teach that which you have forgotten. Remind you of that which you have forgotten. Brilliant. He said a similar thing. I'm trying to be short, but the stories are really nice. Anyway, for an arrival at the New York airport, Prabhupada said the same thing to a reporter. Swamiji, your movement is growing. You have many, many followers all over the country and different parts of the world, and you've come to the West. There must be some message you're carrying. Could you tell our audience, speak into the microphone, please, what's the message that you wish to give to the Western world, Western people here in America? Same message. I've come to teach you who you are, because you have forgotten. Different language, same message. It's the byproduct of say yes to Krishna is we can understand who we are as well as we can understand who is Krishna. And if we can't understand who is Krishna, we're not going to understand who we are, because we're part of Krishna. Or self-realization without God-realization isn't really self-realization, or put it softer, it's incomplete. In the dark of night, if you have a mirror in front of your face, what do you see? Nothing. And when the sunlight comes, you can see the sunlight, you can see your face. Prabhupada's example that God-realization and self-realization, they occur simultaneously. So this vishesha gya is the byproduct of hearing the message of Srimad Bhagavatam. That which we have forgotten awakens the purpose of life, the mission of life. Nath te vidu. There's this word vid again. Na te vidu. Svarta katim hi Vishnu. They don't know their sva arta, the real, the purpose of life, or here it's vishesha. The purpose of life becomes awakened. And when that becomes, proportionately as that becomes awakened, this other term that's used is vishana, kama. Vishana, literally it means disgust or disinterested in, softer, disinterested in sense gratification. Those of you that are familiar with Nectar of Devotion, Chapter 1, Characteristics of Pure Devotional Service, it's the same too. The Sanskrit terms are different, but the beginning of all auspiciousness and the elimination of material suffering, Klesha Agni and Shubhada. The miseries of material existence subside. The misery, the root of that misery is ignorance. The root of suffering is ignorance. Then the essence of ignorance is ignoring Krishna. Same as our Friday evening message. How did material life begin? We turn our attention away from Krishna. How do you get spiritual life to awaken? Turn your attention to Krishna. Visheshika leads to Vishana Kama. This interest in the temporary, you may do things, you perform things, duties and activities and your dharma, sva-dharma, to come to understand who you really are. With they combined with this process of hearing and chanting. So that's what's being said. He's the audience, Maharaj Parikshit. He's in the audience at least. And he's hearing Shukadeva Goswami speaking and he's saying, more. And one who engages in this process can become now awakened to the real purpose of life and disinterest in other things. Anukalyasya sankalpa pratikalyasya varjanam, accepting things favorable to bhakti, leaving aside things that are detrimental to bhakti or not helpful, become less important. We do duties, but we do those duties in a mood that we do because it's part of my nature, and so I'm engaging in my duty in such a way, but the real interest is in such a way that attraction for Krishna comes. That's the art of work. And the Srimad Bhagavatam helps us in becoming life artists. He says, actual speech is that which describes the qualities of the Lord. Real hands are those that work for him. A true mind is that which always remembers him. Dwelling within everything, moving and non-moving, etc. Similar to verses from Canto 2. That the bodies that we have and the different functions of body, hands, eyes, mind, etc., they have their place. We don't have to make them zero. We have to engage them in activities of bhakti that are inspired by the hearing and chanting process. So Sutta Goswami hears his questions. He's very pleased. And his first response, guess, he fixes his mind upon the personality of God. Even before he speaks, he gives full, rapt, undivided attention to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And then he begins responding with Krishna Katha. And Krishna Katha, he starts speaking chapter 80 in terms of one of Krishna's dear friends. So there's a lot of rasa in the matter of friendship, because it's not being a servant of Krishna, that's what we're being encouraged in. But Sudama's not just a servant of Krishna, he has a particular rasa of friendship with Krishna. Very intimate friendship with Krishna. And so Sutta is now going to narrate the nature of that friendship. He had certain qualities. He was vastly learned. He was a brahmana, first of all. And so he had brahminical qualifications. He was very, very learned in the scripture. And he was detached from worldliness in a rather extreme fashion. Although he was a householder, he was a householder brahmana, and so he didn't go to an office or something like that. He engaged in his brahminical activity. And to maintain himself and his wife, there's no indication of children, he just accepted whatever came of its own accord. And sometimes there wasn't much. Sometimes there was hardly anything. But he wasn't disturbed. And it's described that his wife had similar quality. She was also deeply absorbed in activities of brahminical activities of worship and prayer and assisting her husband in his activities. And although they had very little, next to nothing, she wasn't at all in anxiety about it, except for her concern for her good husband. In fact, it says in the commentary, she was even, in certain ways, even more renounced than her renounced husband, because whenever some items of food would come, she made sure that her husband would have and she would do without, because she didn't want her husband to not have something. So she was non-envious and similarly elevated like him. Good match, good for both of them. However, she had natural affection for her husband, and in her natural affection for her husband, she didn't like to see him so lean and thin. It's described later on. He was so thin that the veins of his body were bulging from his skin, resting on the bones. And then the veins, and then the skin. And it was very difficult for her to see her husband in that condition. And so she made an appeal. Those of you that are married, you know what all that's about. And, she's very gentle. But, and very intelligent. And a little persistent, too. Some of you may have wives that are like that. And I'll just read, but our commentators say she basically checkmated him. She knew her husband. She knew what his feelings were, and she gave responses and answers to all of his feelings, one by one by one by one. He didn't feel the need for anything. So, although you don't feel the need for anything, I, as your good wife, have concern. And I know that you don't want to go to Krishna and ask him for something. But you don't even have to go to Krishna and ask him for something. You can just go to Krishna and he'll understand and he'll take care of your needs. And I know you don't feel like you're qualified, but you're a Brahmana and Krishna is the lover of Brahmanas. And you may feel that you're not really a qualified Brahmana, but I know very well that you're Krishna's dear friend. And you may feel that you're not qualified as Krishna's dear friend, but Krishna likes his devotees who are very humble like you. And you may feel, well, it's just, I don't want to bother Krishna, but for Krishna it's nothing. He's already, with his opulence, he's maintaining the entire Yadu dynasty. So what's one little Brahmana to go and, you know, to give some essentials? And then, and other things. So she checkmated him. He didn't say no, but he didn't say yes. Because he just didn't want to do that. Go to Krishna with his hand out and say, can you give me? Didn't want to do that. But after so many times, his wife very politely, very sweetly, very lovingly was nagging him. He started thinking, well, I'd like to see Krishna. I haven't seen Krishna in a long time. So just to see Krishna, I think I'll go. And then my wife will stop nagging me and everything will be nice. So then he said to his wife, but I can't go to see Krishna without taking a gift to him. And we don't have anything. We have nothing in the house. She said, I'll go to a neighbor. And she went to some neighbors and 4 palmfuls of chipped rice. And she got a little cloth and put it in the middle of the cloth and tied the corners of the cloth and gave a little cloth bag to her husband and said, you can give this to Krishna. I'll pay back my neighbors later. He had to borrow. So we visited Porbandar. Porbandar is the place where Sudama lived. Prior to that it was called Sudamapur, but somehow it got changed to Porbandar. And the journey, walking, was nearly the entire day. So Sudama set out early in the morning. And to get to Dwarka, because Dwarka wasn't on land, it was an island in the sea, he had to go by boat. And he went, because he was a Brahmin, he was given free transport, and it's described that there's all these fortifications with military installations set up to make sure Dwarka was protected. But he didn't have to show his visa and passport, they just let him go. Because of his Brahminical qualification. And as he was entering into Dwarka, he was just amazed at the opulence. Because it's the mood of Vaikuntha with a degree more of intimacy than in Vaikuntha. Because in Vaikuntha there's not 16,108 palaces where Lord Narayan expands himself into those many. There's another kind of intimacy in Dwarka. So as he entered into Dwarka, one of the palaces that he started to approach was the palace where Rukmini, the first of Krishna's queens, resided. And as he was approaching, the Bhagavatam describes that Krishna saw Sudama, even before Sudama saw Krishna, he saw them through a window. And immediately, he recognized Sudama, although they hadn't seen each other since childhood. And maybe now is a good time to describe the childhood situation. Mostly, we know about Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan. They're most famous, most often recited. But the amount of time Krishna spent in Vrindavan was not so long. It's said that Krishna resided in his pastime form for around 125 years, and only 12 of those were in Vrindavan. And towards the middle of his 12th year, that's when Kamsa wanted Krishna to come to Mathura so he could kill him. And he sent Akura, and Akura brought him. And so then Krishna entered into Mathura, and many pastimes before entering actually into the city, he broke the sacrificial bow, which was, the event was a bow festival, but there was another idea, the kill Krishna idea. And Krishna gave, as we heard, Krishna gave his mercy to the washerman by separating the clothes of the king from the washerman, along with the head of the washerman from the rest of his body, and liberated him. And then the weaver and the florist and Kubja, Krishna gave his mercy to Kubja. And then he gave his mercy to the Kuvalyapida elephant the next morning. He finished Kuvalyapida, finished the wrestlers, Chandra and Mushtuk and their three brothers and Kamsa, liberated his father, Vasudev and Devaki, from the prison of Kamsa. And then the father of the father of Kamsa, Ugrasena, he released him from prison and reestablished him on the throne. And the members of the Yadu dynasty that had gone elsewhere out of fear of Kamsa, they were invited back, so they took up their residences. So things started moving back to normal. And then Vasudeva and Devaki, they very much wanted their son to get an education. Here he is, 12 years old. He hasn't even gone to school yet. And so they had first, they had him perform his upanayana. And then second, it was some vows of brahmacharya, because they had to go to school. So they took their brahmacharya vows before they went to school. And then there was this discussion about where should he go to school. At least the description that Jiva Goswami gives is that Krishna decided where he would go to school. And Krishna was considering who would be a good teacher. He said actually the best teacher would be Vyasadeva. But Vyasadeva knows that I'm the personality of God, so he'll never become my teacher. And so it has to be somebody that doesn't know that I'm the personality of Godhead. And a very famous personality that previously lived in Benares, and he's actually not even a Vaishnava, but, you know, he'd make a good teacher. He's a very highly learned and well-respected teacher, Sandipani Muni. So he, Krishna, and Balaram decided they should go to school where nobody knows, because he's just killed Kamsa and Chandra and Mushtika, and a whole big thing is going to start to happen. And if they know that Krishna is gone, there may be a problem for the Yadu dynasty. So best if I just go incognito. Nobody knows. So Krishna and Balaram walked on foot, barefoot, as brahmacharis in those days would do, all the way from Mathura to the place where Sandipani Muni had his school. And some of you that live in India, you know where that is. Ujjain. So it's not around the corner. It's quite a distance. And when he got to the school of Sandipani Muni, he saw these two effulgent boys. And he understood they're extraordinary, but he let them know, in this school, although you're from a very elevated family, you're going to have to do what all the other boys do. You do austerities, and I can't treat you in any special way. They were fine. Jiva Goswami then describes that a natural affinity developed for one of the other students, Sudama, of course, because they're devotees. And what devotee and the master of the devotee, or the beloved object of the devotee. But a natural affinity awakened between the two of them. And so they would do many things together. And one fine day, the wife of Sandipani Muni requested the boys to go to the forest and gather items for a yajna for her husband, their teacher, Sandipani Muni. So this was in the winter season, and it doesn't so much rain in the winter season, but that particular day, it was torrential rain, heavy, heavy storm. The Bhagavatam describes there were floods everywhere. Like you couldn't even tell where was the land and where was a lake, because everything was a lake. And so the sunset, the night fell, and they were there. They didn't know how to get back. No street lights, no little flashlight on their cell phone. What to do? So they took shelter under a tree and spent the night hanging out together, just having fun together as dear friends will do. Meanwhile, back at the school, Sandipani Muni is in big anxiety, and we'll hear about this a little bit later. So he came in and found them, and we'll hear as the narration goes on, Krishna describes what happens there. After their education was completed, because Krishna doesn't need to go to school, but he was setting the example, everyone should go to school and have a guru to learn from. And he learned everything in 64 days. Got his certificate, valedictorian of the class, and went back to Mathura. And his pastimes in Mathura continued for some time, after which he left Mathura, specifically, the Bhagavatam says, because he knew that Rukmini was waiting for him to become her husband. So he left for that purpose. And on the way, Balaram married Revati, and then Krishna married Rukmini, and so many other wives, and Krishna was living in Dwarka. And Sudama, when he graduated from Sandipani Muni school, he went back to his home place, was Porbandar. And he then became also a grihastha, but, you know, of a different standard of income than Krishna, which was fine with him, because our acharyas say, if he was such an elevated devotee of Krishna, how come he was so poor? Because yoga kshema vaham yaham, right? Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, unto those who are constantly devoted to me, I preserve what they have and carry what they lack. So the acharyas explain, there's some persons that are renounced, although they have opulence, and there's some person, that's the example that's given is Prahlad, or Ambarish Maharaj, or Yudhisthira Maharaj. They have opulence, but they're not attached to the opulence at all. And then there's some that really don't like opulence. They like the messages used here. They have a dislike because they see it's just an entanglement. It's the just having stuff means getting entangled, and so they have a disdain. And so that was his mood. That was his particular mood. And so Krishna didn't bother him with stuff. He just kept him in that condition because that's what he wanted. So when Krishna saw him after so many, many, many years of being together in school, he recognized him. Although he was elder in age from when they were little boys, he still recognized him. And immediately Krishna stood. Now it gets really nice, because in the relationship between Krishna and his devotee, there's different dimensions of that relationship between Krishna and his devotee. So the first exhibition of that relationship is Krishna set the standard of worshiping the brahmanas. Those of you that have the practice of offering your food to Krishna, you know that one of the prayers that we recite is Namo Brahmanya Devaya Go Brahmana Hittaya Cha. Krishna has great affection for cows and for the Brahmanas. He consistently demonstrates his affection for the cows and the Brahmanas. We heard this morning about Lord Vishnu, the Lord of Sacrifice, when Sunat Kumar came to Maharloka. Lord Vishnu, along with the great sages in Maharloka, they came and they worshipped Sunat Kumar. Krishna likes worshipping the Brahmanas. He likes. So when Sudama came, he immediately stood up and he offered his seat to Sudama. And right there from his seat, he washed his feet and then he worshipped him, while the goddess of fortune, Rukmini, is fanning him with a chamara fan. And the persons that were in the assembly of Lord Krishna in his palace were amazed. Like, this person looks like a beggar, a pauper. But Krishna is treating him with such affection. He's embracing him and worshiping him. Who is this person, and how fortunate is this person? That was the first exchange, is Krishna in his role as a Kshatriya prince worshipping a Brahmana, respecting and worshipping a Brahmana. That's Krishna towards the Brahmana, Sudama. And then the mood changed and the role changed, and Krishna then was taking the position of the Supreme Lord in his devotee. And it changes to a third position yet again. So Krishna is speaking to Sudama, saying, I see that you're dressed in such a way, it looks like you're a householder. So after you left school, did you become married? And how is it that you're maintaining yourself as a Brahmana? You look very thin. Is everything all right? I know that you're fixed in transcendental knowledge. Maybe that has something to do with your level of detachment. So he's just inquiring, you know, as like a friend to a friend, into his well-being. And then he starts reminiscing of their time together. Do you remember when, you know, when you get together with somebody that you know and you haven't been with them for a long time, there's some reminiscing thing that goes on commonly. Do you remember when we went to school together? I'm sure you remember. How satisfied was Sudama by the service that you and I rendered together? And then he said, as the soul of all souls, so now he's speaking as God, there's nothing that pleases me as much as the rendering of selfless service to the spiritual master. He lists other things that are less important. It's kind of like the second kind of saying yes to Krishna, where you rule other things out. So there are other things that are nice, that are described in the Vedas, sacrifices and austerities and penances and charity and all kinds of nice things. Those things are nice, but they don't satisfy me as much as this one thing. And that is heart and soul given to the instruction of the spiritual master. And then he carries on and says that actually Sandipani Muni spoke like that to us. Shri Shri Radha Damodar Ki. Long commentary, and we don't have time for it. But in my research on that, there's two verses where Krishna speaks about the importance of the service rendered to the spiritual master, and it's not only the commentary on that verse, but it's referred to again and again and again and again and again and again and again in different places, that particular statement by Krishna about what pleases him, and lots of commentary. The importance for saying yes to Krishna, because when Sudama Brahmana and Krishna pleased Sandipani Muni, he said, it's actually the duty of the disciple to please the spiritual master in all respects. He uses two things, with wealth and with their body, wealth and words. And you have pleased me very much, and therefore I give you this benediction that all the mantras and teachings that you learned, you won't forget them. That's pretty nice. And that the meaning will be with you for your whole life. So that's a benediction that's you need to get from someone, because ultimately it's super soul that's the source of knowledge, remembrance, and forgetfulness. But mercy of the Vaishnavas helps Krishna, prompt Krishna to give that remembrance. And the spiritual potency. Very similar to what we heard this morning about Gopakumar. To go the full distance of receiving mercy requires a strong desire on our part, but it also the receiving the mercy of those who are dear to the Lord, and going further, going further, going further. It's just a spiritual principle. It's a nice principle. It's a Krishna principle. And there isn't exception to it. So he's acted like a Kshatriya to a Brahmana. He's acted like a Supreme Lord to his devotee. And now he's going to have this nice discussion about their friendship. Because that was what was attractive to Sudama, to want to go to Krishna. So he reciprocates with this loving relationship of the friend of Krishna. And so he remembers the good old days long ago when we were in school together, and these events happened, and Sandipani Muni was very pleased with us, and we received this benediction from Sandipani Muni. And in this way, they spent the whole evening together. And towards the end of the evening, Krishna said, he asked, did you bring some gift? Of course, he's omniscient, he knew. And plus, Sudama is cultured, so when you visit someone, when you in the presence of an exalted person, there's Vedic injunctions, six different, actually. Devaki Nandan recited the six when he gave the Sunday feast lecture last week in the Chicago temple. But you bring something as a gift. So what did you bring? And Sudama had this bag with a broken rice, flat rice, hidden behind. If you ever have a drama in your temple on the story of Sudama, it's a giveaway. You got to have a little bag that has some rice in it. And Krishna snatched the bag from behind his back, opened up the cloth, and started to take some of the broken rice. And he was appreciating. Very, very similar to the pastime between Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Raghunath Das Goswami, when Raghunath Das was eating the rice that even the cows wouldn't eat because it was rotten. And then he'd take that rotten rice and wash away the rotten part, and some uncooked little core part was left. That was what he took for his meal, what even the cows wouldn't eat. Lord Chaitanya took some, and Raghunath saying, no, it's not fit for you. He said, what do you mean? This is the most delicious rice I've ever had. Why are you hoarding it? You're a miser. So Krishna took some of Sudama's rice. Again, remember these references from scripture that what was the value of the offering? It wasn't the value of the rice, it was the love of Sudama. That was what was so tasty, satisfying. And as he was reaching to take more, Rukmini stopped him. Now some acharyas say she did because it wasn't fit for Krishna. But the Bhagavatam says, how will you possibly repay him? Because of the love with which he's offered. So how are you possibly? Of course, he's Madhava. He's the personality of Godhead, the husband of the goddess of fortune, and she's the goddess of fortune. He can do anything. But that was the exchange. And Sudama ended up spending the night in Dwarka. And then in the morning, they parted, and Sudama's heading back to Porbandar. So as he's heading back to Porbandar, he's naturally reminiscing on all of these wonderful exchanges with Krishna. Just like many of you, hopefully, on your way back, going to wherever you came from, you'll be thinking of things that you heard and saw and experienced in the kirtans and the deities and the wonderful devotees that you hadn't seen for some time and new devotees that you met and made friendships with. And the kids will be all like wound up like anything about what their experiences are. They're having a great time out there. It didn't rain after all. Not yet anyways. So he was doing like that. Just meditating on Krishna, because for him there's nothing else. He's that kind of a devotee. There's nothing else but Krishna. So he was thinking, Krishna is so kind. He knew why I came, but he didn't ask me why I came, because if he had asked me why I came, I'm a Brahmin, I'd have to tell him why I came. And I would tell him I need something, and Krishna would have gladly given me so much, then I would start to get proud. Oh, I'm special. Krishna gave me so much. And then when I'd have those things, I start getting attached to those things, and Krishna knows I have a tendency to get attached. So Krishna didn't even ask me, although he knew. And all the way home, whole day's journey, just thinking, Krishna is so kind. Krishna is so kind. Krishna is so kind. He didn't say, you know, what's my wife going to say? Just thinking, Krishna is so kind. And when he got back to his home in Porbandar, his home wasn't there anymore. Because he lived in a very poor place. Instead of the poor place that was there just the other day when he left, there's this, described in the Bhagavatam, it's not just a palace, but practically a whole city with gardens and trees and birds and opulence like anything, and maidservants and musicians and yada, 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 the whole thing. And from out of, so what happened to my house? And from out of the palace comes some lady he didn't even recognize that turned out to be his wife, because she was so decorated with fine cloth and ornaments and nice hair and this and that. And then when she spoke, then he recognized her voice. That's my wife. She recognized him, the Bhagavatam explains, because he still looked, you know, the same. But as soon as she came into the presence of her husband, he also became just like magically decorated in an opulent way. And he said, what happened to our house? And she said, well, I just thought you had asked Krishna for some help, and this is what Krishna did. So as she was describing what her experience was back in Porbandar while he was in Dwarka, he then understood. Although Krishna didn't ask, he knew. And specifically, the commentary says, he gives a different reason why Krishna didn't ask. Sudama would be embarrassed. He knew that the heart of Sudama, so he didn't ask. Although he knew, because he would have been embarrassed. So he didn't want to have him embarrassed in front of Krishna, so he would just go back and find everything that he found. So he was thinking, my Krishna is very kind. Not for me, but for the sake of my dear wife, who was in anxiety for me. And although I wasn't in any anxiety, she was in anxiety for me. Krishna took away her anxiety. Krishna is so kind. And then he prayed that, Krishna, you know my heart. Please protect me from pride. Please protect me from attachment. I want to use this in your service. It's yours. I want to use it in your service. And he continued in his life of austerity. Specifically, it describes just sleeping on the bare floor as he was doing before. Living a life of detachment. Now, how does this connect with our theme? Because I still want to leave some time for discussion. The theme is say yes to Krishna. And I'm sure you've been hearing different examples of how to say yes to Krishna when it's mean, or things aren't going your way, or it's tough, or something like that. And how to say yes to Krishna where you don't have this problem where you become the enjoyer of a little advancement. You become proud of, I have nice sadhana. Now I've become humble. Now I have some titles and I have some recognition. Some other people are appreciating. Oh, you can sing kirtan so nicely. Or, oh, you can cook so nicely. Or whatever it is. You get some pat on the back. Some recognition which people crave. If they don't get, they feel disappointed. How come no one's recognizing? So the have or have not position is not in and of itself an advantage or disadvantage. If you're in the mood of say yes to Krishna, it can be this way or that way. And looking at the clock, I don't want to get too distracted. But Prabhupada taught us the same. I'll give two examples, which I've repeated a zillion times. But it's nice to hear them again and again. One time, early in our movement, their devotees were requesting Prabhupada for photographs they could put on the altar. So along with the Panchatattva picture, they could have a full-body picture of Prabhupada on the altar, because they heard that was the way to do it. So they asked Prabhupada, would you pose for a photographer to take pictures we can put on the altar? So he agreed, but then he decided to be the choreographer. And he wanted two different ones. It was for the purpose of instructing. So one of them was, he had cotton dhoti and top cloth, uttriya, in the summertime, that was lightly dyed, not heavily colored. And he stood at the edge of, I'm looking at Krishnarjuna, who's a photographer, where the backdrop was a very large tree that had lots of shade. So the backdrop was dark, and Prabhupada was at the edge of the shade, so he was in light. And he had his danda, and he was looking very serious, with his head tilted back like he would do sometimes. So a very serious pose. So photographs of that pose. Then he said, okay. And the arrangement, it was done in advance, he wanted to go indoors and have a purple crushed velvet backdrop. So again, dark backdrop. And lights on front. And then he had freshly dyed bright orange silk dhoti, uttariya, and long sleeve kurta. You're like opulent. So the devotee that told me the story When Prabhupada came out after changing clothes, he stood in the middle of the room like a ballerina. He put his finger over his head, did a very slow pirouette, and smiled. And said, "For Krishna, we can accept anything." And then he took the photograph, and you may have seen that photograph of the purple velvet backdrop and Prabhupada in the bright orange dhoti. And his instruction was, "For Krishna, we can accept either end. Have not or have, and not be unhappy or happy. Our happiness is to be in Krishna's service." The say yes to Krishna message is, we can have this or that. We can have nothing or something or whatever. Now, for Krishna's purpose, we want something nice. But it may come and may not come, and we make reasonable endeavor to something nice, and we make the best offering we can, given the resources that Krishna provides us. And it may be something that's insignificant, as what was even borrowed from a neighbor. But what's significant is the love with which something is offered, and that's what Krishna wants. And when that's the relationship that we have with Krishna, that say yes to Krishna message is so strong. The kindness of Krishna can look like this or it can look like that. And it's not, that's not kindness and this is kindness or vice versa. It's Krishna's nature is he's kind. And those who are his devotees, they know that. And I'm looking at the clock again. There's another couple of examples, anecdotal with Srila Prabhupada, but I won't go there. He trained us. He was consciously training us. This principle of detachment from the external and attachment to the humble mood of service to Krishna in all circumstances. It's completely on the topic of say yes to Krishna. And Sudama is a wonderful, wonderful example of that. And as we heard the very first evening, Friday evening, Chaitanya Charitamrita says, Lord Chaitanya says to Sanatana Goswami, one who takes shelter of Krishna in that way, Krishna accepts that person as his confidential associate. So if you want to become Krishna's confidential associate, take full shelter of him. Full shelter of him. Whether it's this or that. Full shelter of him. It gets difficult sometimes. Take full shelter of him. And then there's no need for fear. There may be fearful circumstance, but there's no need for fear because Krishna's protection is there. Okay. Any questions or discussion? Param Rupa in the front here.
Guru Maharaj, can you please kindly explain the significance of why he was stopped to take another grain of rice? I did not fully follow the
I only know what our acharyas say. And what our acharyas say is, Rukmini was concerned, how will you repay? No. She's the goddess of fortune, and he's the husband of the goddess of fortune, so what shortage is there for him to repay? That's the logic of it. It's not a logical statement. It's a devotional statement. How will you repay? It's something that is something similar to what Lord Brahma says in the 14th chapter of Canto 10, where he asks, he's speaking to Krishna and saying, how are you going to repay your devotees? Because you give yourself to persons like Putana and Bakasura and others. You give yourself to them. How are you going to repay the sacrifice and the love of the residents of Vrindavan. Vishwanath says in his commentary, he cannot. It's a transcendental message. It's it's beyond rational thought. Of course he can. What is it that he can't do? Then he's not God. But the love of the devotee is such, how will Krishna repay? He gives himself to that devotee. That's how he repays.
Thank you.
Yes.
Sorry. Hare Krishna Guru Maharaj. I was just thinking on what you said on Sudama Brahmana when he realized Krishna's kindness when he came back to his home. And I had just recently a friend devotee who was sharing with me during his time, the time of his initiation, that his spiritual master was standing himself so much in terms of praising and talking about this devotee that he was very appreciative but he was afraid of becoming proud about it, because although it was so many people initiated, the spiritual master spent so much time just with him. And obviously, we come to understand this is the kindness of the spiritual master, and then you say, I don't want to be proud, but what are, obviously not just that is necessary, but there's much more to it, because we can get familiar, very easily. So what other things can you say we have to constantly cultivate to maintain that mood of humility and appreciation and gratitude, to understand that we always under the grace and the kindness of Guru and Krishna?
Well, something that I said earlier, I'll just repeat it, and that is, when one enters into the spiritual realm or the spiritual dimension, there's no bottom to the ocean of anything. The ocean of rasa, the ocean of, in this case, the ocean of humility. So your question is how to cultivate it, and the essence of how to cultivate it is to see that it's important, and before Krishna, I'm very tiny. And the greatness of Krishna enhances our understanding of our tininess, and the strength of bhakti enhances our sense of tininess. And there's no limit to it. The converse is where we receive something and we want to become the enjoyer of that something. We discussed this the other day, another class. A little success in bhakti and we want to be the enjoyer of that, because that's material tendency. So you replace the material tendency with spiritual tendency. It all is from Krishna and it's meant for Krishna. So it's love. I wish to be in a loving relationship with Krishna, not some other kind. I find personally that Srimad Bhagavatam wonderfully nourishes in response to your question. It nourishes the proper mood. the message and taking the message to heart. Shinvanti gayanti grananti. Taking the message to heart. And then that humility grows. The qualifications that are pleasing to Krishna, by which then Krishna decorates one with further quality from the process of hearing itself in the right mood. That, like we were discussing with some devotees today, in the mood that I wish to know. I wish to know, who is this Krishna? What is having a relationship with Krishna like? What does it feel like? How do you act? And so, I wish to know. And then you hear Srimad Bhagavatam and then the answer comes. It's an answer that we already know. That bhakti is something that we already know, we're just disconnected from it. So by the message, hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, the two, primarily, hearing Srimad Bhagavatam and kirtan, just entering into the joy of chanting the holy names in our japa and with others. By the way, is our kirtan party here? Has anybody seen them? Have you seen them? Could you find out? Okay. Could you over here?
Hare Krishna Maharaj, in the last two classes we discussed about taking shelter. One is Jiva Goswami says by using the intelligence, and another one is just raising our hands and saying, Krishna, I'm yours. So I'm thinking even in the first one where one raises his hand and says, Krishna, I'm yours, intelligence does play its part. And I have 2-3 points more connected to that. I am also thinking about which we hear in Sri Vaishnava tradition, north and south, two ways of taking the shelter.
Yes.
Kitten in the mouth of mother cat, and another is the monkey thing. So, looks like the kitten one, where it says that, okay Lord, I'm yours, and the monkey example, little bit tells about the intelligence.
No. It's an ongoing, it's not an event, it's an ongoing submission. That's the message. Not just discriminatory, but an ongoing effort as opposed to a one-time event.
Right, but does not the first one also needs the intelligence? And then I'm also thinking...
Of course.
Yeah.
No. I'm used to your questions lead to more questions, lead to more questions. So I don't mind. I don't mind. But yes, when there's the throwing up of one's hands and say, Krishna, I am yours, it doesn't mean there's no, the intelligence goes into the off position. And power of discrimination, just like you just cast it to the side. Doesn't mean that. Rather, it means that Krishna then supplies the fruit of good intelligence to the intelligent, Didami Buddhi Yogam Tam, or Vasudeva Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Prayota Taha Janti Ati Ashu Vairagyam Gyanam Cha Yadahaitukam. When one takes that position of giving oneself to Krishna, he gives intelligence, he gives knowledge, he gives direction, he gives everything. So it's operative in a different way. Intelligence is being exercised in a different way. Not so much in pushing this thing, that thing, the other options to the side, but knowing which, you know, whether to turn left or right in different situations of life. Krishna gives that intelligence and there's the faith. Krishna, I'm yours.
Okay.
Okay?
Yes, thank you.
No follow-up?
I'm sure
there is.
Yeah. So
some clarification, please.
So that's what I think you mentioned, that it's the faith. So it's the free will and the faith.
Yes.
That is the first thing,
yes,
that plays into part. And then maybe, yes, Krishna gives the intelligence, and that is how.
Yes.
That's it. Yeah. Thank you.
The function moves forward in a different way. So it's not that intelligence is absent, or discriminating power, which is a function of intelligence, is absent. It's just how it operates is different. The reciprocation from Krishna is different because of a different spirit. It's nice that there's variegatedness.
Thank you.
Okay. Anyone else? Yes. Raise your hand again.
Hare Krishna Guru Maharaj. So my question is, when we are talking about Prabhupada saying we accept anything in service to Krishna, especially the pastime when he was wearing just uttariya and this, and then taking a photograph. So the question is, to connect with the people, we either try to dress up in that way, or, you know, external appearance we give it in a way to connect sometimes.
Sometimes, sure.
Sometimes. So, where do we draw a line to how, what extent do we change the appearance to connect?
Take a little common sense. Depends on the individual who's... It depends. I'm remembering, from your question, I'm remembering a story that Satsurup Maharaj told me. There was a time, because he was the president in Boston, where I was the first joining, and there was a period of time when, before they had a center, they just had a little apartment where they stayed, and they had little gatherings in their little apartment where they stayed. And they didn't have any money, so when Prabhupada came to the Boston airport, they had to pick him up in a taxi, because he didn't have a car. So they picked him up in a taxi, and it's one of these taxi cab drivers is looking over the, not looking at the road, and talking over his shoulder to the people in the back seat, saying the way that Satsurup Maharaj told us, like with a Boston accent. So you're one of them swamis, huh? Prabhupada said, yes. So does that mean that you sleep on a bed of nails or something like that? And Prabhupada said, better than that. Yeah, it was better than that. Prabhupada said, I can be in a room full of naked women and not be disturbed. Oh. Now, Satsurup Maharaj's comment was, I don't know if the taxi driver really understood what Prabhupada does. So we don't... probably wouldn't visit a nudist colony, and probably wouldn't dress like they do so they feel comfortable with us. So you use a little common sense. You know, how you dress. But, you know, a very nice example of appropriate dressing is Bhakti Tirtha Swami, because he was residing here in the GBC for some number of years, leading this community. So when he would go to deal with African folks, he would dress in African attire, and when he would go to a business event, he'd dress in a business suit, and, you know, when he would go to a devotee program, he'd wear dhoti and tilak and big smile. He was capable, without having a difficulty in his consciousness, of accommodating the audience. And others don't do that. They just are who they are in the midst of how other people are. They're not judgmental and the other persons feel not judged and it's fine. Or like with book distribution, a little example. Vaisheshika Prabhu is really clear about Dodi Tilak shaved head. There's another very wonderful devotee, Jai Chaitanya in Los Angeles, number one book distributor in America these days, and he goes in Western clothes to college campuses. So does that mean Vaisheshika is wrong and he's right, or he's right and Vaisheshika is wrong, or the other way around, whichever? It just depends. You know, what's appropriate. Sometimes, just because of the law of the country, you don't have a choice. And when you have a choice, then you have a choice depending upon you and the circumstance. The goal is not just have people feel comfortable, because we want people to feel comfortable and as opposed to intimidated, but a lot of that has to do with your demeanor, not just how you're attired. Yeah.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. I was pondering this question and then it's kind of piggybacking off of his,
okay,
so it kind of works.
We're stalling for time for the kirtan people to come anyways.
Okay, so personally, right, like when I try to submerge myself in Krishna, you know, like say yes to Krishna, in my material life at least, like work life, you know, it becomes hard to endure the material aspects of life because it's like, you know, they're constantly in the mode of ignorance and in the mode of passion and you're trying to be in the mode of goodness, but then you quickly just get pulled in, you know, because if you own into that mode of goodness, it's almost as if people feel so, you basically like sabotage your whole material life that way. At least that's for me personally, maybe because I'm still very young in Krishna consciousness, but it's very hard for me to endure the materialism, when I'm trying to be spiritual, and maybe it's part of the aspect of New York. I'm not sure, but it's very difficult to say yes 100% to Krishna and live partially, you know, doing these material things.
Well, thank you for that, because I'm sure that's something that people that aren't from New York also feel. And even those that aren't as new as you are in Krishna consciousness, they also feel. Because experience says, as you progress in Krishna consciousness, so do the challenges. And they're shaking their heads around you in different directions. So, to say yes to Krishna, something that, looking over that side of the room, I don't think he's here with us now, a devotee was asking earlier, that the say yes to Krishna part is the inside. So there's very nice instructions. I recommend, you know, when you're not really sure which the next book you're going to read, because there's so many books to read. Mm-hmm. But Bhaktivinod Thakur, you know who he is?
No.
No? The song that we sang this morning, did you hear for Udila Aruna, that song?
Yeah.
So his picture was at the end, that last night he was during Chaturmasya wearing a beard. He's on our altar, in our disciplic succession, Bhaktivinod Thakur. So, and his picture is right there. And that same picture that's in the third column over to the right. Yes, that's Bhaktivinod Thakur. One of our great acharyas was also a householder, and he was in government service, which means he had social obligation. He had 10 children, which meant he was really busy. And he wrote 100 books, which meant he was like an amazing person with a lot to give to the world. So one of those 100 books is called Bhaktyaloka. Bhaktyaloka is his commentary on the six things that enhance bhakti and six things that destroy bhakti, that are taken directly from Nectar of Instruction. You've heard of that book?
Yes.
Yes?
Yes.
You have it?
Yes.
Oh, good.
I have.
Okay, so there's the six and the six. So his this book is just expanding on those. And in that book, he describes exactly, well, at least guidelines, how you can function, not just in goodness, but in saying yes to Krishna bhakti mood in the workplace without being affected. So it's a strong yes to Krishna inside and outside. There are cordialities. How are you today? How'd your weekend go? Did you have a nice time? It's just cordial. You're not invested in it, but you're, just socially cordial. And internally, you're hearing all the, you're remembering, like I said, you're going back to New York and thinking, what are the things that I learned? What is it that I'm going to apply? At least make my effort to apply. And you're processing things in that way, as you're in the workplace. So over here is somebody that had a good weekend and they're blabbering about it. Over there is somebody that had a bad weekend because they had an accident, a flat tire or something like that, and they're blabbering about it. And you have the good times and the bad times, and they're all invested in ignorance and passion. And so from your position, it's very interesting display of the modes of nature here. You're in this detached mood of seeing the message of Bhagavad Gita in real life, being, rerun again and again and again, and praying to Krishna, please use me as your instrument. Please give me the opportunity, as I'm trying to carry bhakti in my heart, to have an opportunity to give bhakti to some of these people, at least one person. So you're the messenger of Krishna bhakti in the workplace. There's protection in that. You may or may not get a clear signal, green, give Krishna bhakti. But you're in your heart, that's your contemplation. And because of that contemplation, there's protection. So while somebody is going off about whatever, good times, bad times, your thought is, Krishna, please give me the opportunity to give bhakti to them. And please let me exhibit the qualities of one who is carrying bhakti so that they'll become attracted to those qualities. And then maybe they'll have a question about, how come you're so peaceful? And, it's, or whatever it is that they may say. You seem to be such a calm person. Or whatever it is. How come you don't hang out with us? They may be a criticism. Or whatever it is. And then you're coming from a place of devotion to Krishna. So you're calling upon Krishna for the proper answer to give in that circumstance. And you don't know what's going to come out because you haven't pre-cooked what their question and the answer is going to be. But you're just with Krishna, thinking for some opportunity to be an emissary of Krishna.
Very quickly, can I say something?
Yeah.
I'll just explain to you. Mostly everyone at my job knows already my spirituality. It's pretty evident. But like my peers, for instance, they'll sit there and eat their meat, and they'll look at me while they do it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like just to make me uncomfortable, stuff like that. Like why? And so I don't know how to deal with stuff like that. I just leave the room and I come back and I open the window or whatever, and it's just like, it's constantly like that. It's just like, well, what do you do?
Don't be taunted. Mm. If you're saying a big yes to Krishna inside, you can have a big smile outside. Mm. Because they're uncomfortable. Mm. Meaning, your lifestyle is saying no to their lifestyle.
Right.
So that intimidates them. You're threatening them.
Yeah.
You're not threatening them. But they feel, because they're insecure about their lifestyle, that's why they're sneering or, taunting or whatever.
Mm.
So, just a big smile.
Yeah. Thank you.
Just a big smile. And, if they feel they're getting under your skin, they'll keep doing it.
Yeah.
So you may decide, you know, next week I'm going to have my lunch somewhere else, just because I don't think it's good for them. And, you know, I have my limits of how tolerant I can be, because I'm not so advanced.
Yeah.
But I can understand why they're doing, and that means that there's pain inside. They're insecure with their situation, and so they're trying to protect against their what they know isn't mm-hmm. a good situation. Mm-hmm. And they're feeling like justified and harumph towards you. Mm-hmm. So, how unfortunate that they
Thank
feel
you.
Like that. And you know, make a plan. This is just an idea, but make a plan where next week or 2 weeks later you can bring something that they may like that's prashadam. Okay? And you know, so in other words, you just continue being a well-wisher rather than defensed. Just a giver of bhakti somehow. So that bhakti can somehow, at least a drop can touch their heart and there's some benefit. So just continue in that mood of being the humble servant, even for people who have trouble in their heart towards, you know, their situation. Okay, how are we doing? Is the team all here? Yeah? Okay. So Subal, what's the plan? You're going to set everybody up right here? So we're going to do a little time out. You can mill around and be happy and do what you want to do. But don't go far away.